And good morning. It's time for the program called Health Essentials. Saturday morning, it's raining outside. It's really nice. I think you're going to like today. That is, unless you're driving to Dallas to go Christmas shopping. I wouldn't recommend it. No, that's none of my business. You can do what you want with your time. But be safe if you're on the road. Okay, I did not copy the article because it came up on my phone yesterday. But I thought it was so interesting. Here was the title of the article. And if I don't get it right, I'm going to be pretty close to it. They were saying that people that have had the COVID vaccine to prevent the COVID-19 and had all their boosters and were up to date, they said what they really, really need is if they have a breakthrough infection, that means they get sick with the coronaviral infection, even though they've been vaccinated. But they're really going to have great antibodies against it and protection if they could just go ahead and get sick. I thought to myself, how many different ways can you tell a story and try to convince people one way is any way? It's just nuts. It's crazy. I want to read this to you this morning. This came from the year 1960. And who knows? Maybe you were born in 1960. Maybe today's your birthday. Wouldn't that be fabulous? Okay. By the way, I'll go ahead and give out the phone number. If you want to call me in just a little bit and ask a question tell me what's going on with your health on the radio, that would be excellent. The number is 903-586-5257. Okay. In 1960, researchers at Ann Arbor University, they performed a very interesting experiment on laboratory rats. Not human beings, mind you, but rats. They started with 18 rats, and they were divided into three groups. I'm thinking that's six per group. One group was fed cornflakes and water. Okay. The second group was given the cardboard box that the cornflakes came in, and water also to drink. And the control group received rat chow and water. So when you say rat chow, just think about going to the pet supply store and buying food made specifically for a rat. You know, they claim on the label it has all the nutrients and the vitamins and the minerals and the protein and the fat that a rat needs to be super healthy. Which, I know it sounds bizarre, but there's some people, that's their favorite pet of all time is a rat. A rat is extremely intelligent, and to me, they're very, very comical. I used to take peanut butter and smear it onto a pine cone and then tie the pine cone over the compost pile to see how hard rats would try to jump up and grab the pine cone. It's hilarious. Which, that's what a game camera's for. It's not for looking for deer. It's for looking for rats over the compost pile. Peanut butter officially drives them crazy. They can't resist that. Okay, let me start over here. They had 18 rats, six rats per group. One was given cornflakes and water. One was given the cardboard box that the cornflakes came in as food. And the control group received rat food or rat chow and water. The rats in the control group remained in good health throughout the experiment. Okay. The rats receiving the box became lethargic and eventually died of malnutrition. But the rats receiving cornflakes and water, they died before the rats that were given the cardboard box. The last cornflake rat died on the day the first box rat died. Isn't that amazing? Before death, the cornflake rats developed schizophrenic behavior. They threw fits, they bit each other, and finally went into convulsions. Autopsy revealed dysfunction of the pancreas, the liver, the kidneys, and degeneration of the nerves in the spine. Isn't that interesting? All these are signs of insulin shock. The startling conclusion of the study is that there is more nourishment in the box that the cold breakfast cereals come in than in the cereals themselves. Lauren Zanier, designer of the experiment, actually proposed the protocol as a joke. but the results are far from funny. They were never published, and similar studies have not been repeated. So if consumers knew the truth about breakfast cereals, vast fortunes would be jeopardized. Okay, I'm ready to take a phone call now. Thanks for letting me finish that. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I'm ready to go. I got my pencil and my sheet of paper ready. I think I borrowed it from somebody. The sheet of paper, that is. Okay. I see it all the time. It doesn't do any good to be judgmental. It doesn't do any good to chastise somebody. You just got to tell them the truth about it. But I've seen people where they only eat three foods. It might be chicken nuggets, Kraft macaroni and cheese, and say Dr. Peppers. And that's it. And so they don't really have much variety beyond that. But could you see how obviously deficient that would be in getting a wide variety of nutrients into the human body? Oh my goodness. Plus, the question would be, is there actually any nutritional value in Kraft macaroni and cheese? Okay, I'm just asking the question. I hope we don't get in trouble over that. Okay, let's go to the phone lines and get off that topic. Good morning and welcome to the program. Can you hear me? Okay. Well, evidently not. I think I pushed the button correctly. If you will, please try again. 903-586-5257. And so we'll give it another shot here. Okay. What else was I going to show you right here? Okay, here we go. Now, here's a good one right here also. I'm trying to think. This comes from an author by the name of Paul Stitt, STITT, Fighting the Food Giants, from his book. This is interesting to me right here. Well, let me see if I can take a phone call. I'll see if this is working. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Well, I can just tell it's going to be one of those days today, so maybe the lightning has damaged the part of the radio station that allows calls to come in. So I'm pushing the button like I always have. Nothing's happening. So let me go ahead and share this with you. I'm still going to do my very best to give you high-quality information that you can in turn put into practice and use for yourself. Let me go backwards just for one moment. Let me just kind of break it down for you. I get the great blessing and pleasure of taking care of people all day long. It's really a lot of fun. I don't even really remember the last time that I had a bad case. All of them are so good. Every single human being is so interesting. They're so unique. They come in with a different set of symptoms. There's no two people alike. And so that's the challenge you have in front of you. You've got to figure out what is the primary issue that's generating the vast majority of the problems. Now, true, you do have complicating factors, and one of them would be, as an example, if somebody had a kidney issue where their kidneys weren't working right, and then you discover them to be dehydrated, meaning they just did not have enough water to allow their body to operate optimally. Does that make sense? Well, you have to correct the dehydration. That just kind of goes without saying. You can't tell a person, here, just take these supplements and your kidneys will get well. No, I don't think that would be accurate or true. You've got to rehydrate the body. But one of the things that I see over and over again, if I'm allowed to, you know, give my own comments on this, is when somebody confesses what their problem is and they say, you know what, I've had a rough time with this right here. I'm sick of it. I can't take it anymore. The pain is too much, or I'm having gut-wrenching gut pain. I double over. I can't survive. I think that's a starting point. If you can tell a physician what the problem is and what your symptoms are, I think it's game on at that point. Then we can start sorting through what's involved. And so I had a lady come in yesterday, and she was telling me for a little period of time before that she just suffered so horribly from swelling of her abdomen and bloating. and she had such tremendous acid reflux. But one of the things that we had worked on the previous month was just trying to aid healing of the liver. And the liver, by weight, is the largest internal organ. It's amazing what the liver does. I think mistakenly, people view the liver as something that's just dealing with one toxin after the other, and they're right about that. But see, the liver, whether it's in a human being or in a cow, they don't store the toxins. Yes, they do detoxify these fat-soluble, wicked toxins that would poison a person, but they don't store them. What that means to you is, if you're trying to rejuvenate your health, and you said to yourself, what can I do to greatly improve my health? Well, one of those would be adopting the old mother's habit of cooking liver and onions once a week for your children, or for your husband and family, or for yourself. Liver is so nutrient dense, it's incredible. Now, here I have another one for you. And yeah, you could probably say, well, Dr. Morgan, aren't they doing this to human beings? Well, absolutely they are, but not in a control setting. Okay, here goes. Four sets of rats. They were all given a very unique, special diet. Okay? One group of rats received plain whole wheat. They were given water, vitamins, and minerals. Okay? Another group of rats received puffed wheat. And that would be found in the breakfast cereal aisle at the grocery store. And they were given also water and the same nutrient solution. So the first group of rats was given the regular whole wheat. The second group was given puffed wheat. Probably to eat like breakfast cereal. The third set was given water and white sugar. Oh my goodness, isn't that something? That's all they gave them was sugar and water. That's probably like crack cocaine for the rats. And the fourth group of rats was given nothing but water and the nutrients. So they gave them vitamins and minerals in their drinking water. It says the rats who got nothing but water and vitamins lived for about 8 weeks. Okay? And it said the animals on the white sugar in the water diet, they were also given vitamins and minerals. They lived for a month. Can you imagine that? Does that prove a point to you that sugar can kill you? It's probably unlikely, especially with the holidays just right around the corner, that you're going to make it through this without eating something that has sugar in it. Okay? But isn't that interesting how the rats that only received the water and the mixture of vitamins and minerals, they live for 8 weeks, but those that were given white sugar and the water, they only made it a month. It says, but the companies, what's the name of the company? Their own laboratory studies show that the rats given vitamins and water and all the puffed wheat, they wanted to die in 2 weeks. Now, isn't that interesting? So we keep getting, doing without is better than having, sugar or puffed wheat. It wasn't a matter of the rats dying of malnutrition. Results like these suggest that there was something actually toxic about the puffed wheat itself. Proteins are very similar to certain toxins in molecular structure. And the puffing process, if you don't know this, to me this is fascinating. The puffing process of putting the grain under 1,500 pounds per square inch of pressure and then releasing it, it may produce chemical changes which turn a nutritious grain into a poisonous substance. I was shocked, so I showed my report to Dr. Clark, who shared my concern. His predecessor, Dr. Graham, had published the report and begged the company not to continue producing puffed wheat because of the poisonous effects on animals. Dr. Clark, it says, he went right to the president. I know people should throw it on brides and grooms at weddings, and of course, the president cracked, but if they insist on sticking it in their mouths, can I help it? But besides, we made $9 million on the stuff last year. I don't really know what year this was published, but I'm guessing the 1960s. You'd be far better off eating eggs for breakfast. Sure, let the chickens run around the garden, eat all the grasshoppers, crickets. Have you ever seen a chicken that will refuse a delicious cricket or earthworm? I haven't. You know, in my mind, I can see an image of our backyard when we lived in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. And we had goats, cows, horses. We had a tank or a pond beside the house. And you know what I remember right now? I remember the frozen ice on top of the pond and looking under and seeing goldfish swim around. I thought that was so cool. So, if you want to know if goldfish can survive the freeze, evidently they can. Okay, I'm so sorry, but the phone lines just aren't working today. It's just the way it is. You have a lightning strike and stuff like this happens. Does that make sense? What would be something better than eating a puffed wheat or a breakfast cereal for breakfast? Well, just about anything would, but eggs, it sure does come to my mind. Listen to this right here. For 15 years, an 88-year-old Denver man has been consuming 24 soft-boiled eggs a day. I don't know about you, but that is incredible. 24 eggs a day. Did he have room for anything else? I had boiled eggs one day this week, and I think I ate three. And that was great. Okay, this particular story made it to the New England Journal of Medicine because a researcher from the University of Colorado wondered how this compulsive cholesterol cuisine might be affecting the man's health. To his surprise, the scientist found that despite a cholesterol intake of close to 6,000 milligrams a day, that is well above the U.S. RDA recommended maximum of 300 milligrams per day of cholesterol I'm referring to. You know what I'm saying? Eggs, well, you may not know this, so I'll go ahead and say them. Eggs, because they're an animal product, they do a great job of providing cholesterol to the human body. And I know this is bizarre, but you can't make all the cholesterol that you actually need. It can't be done. You've got to get it from the food that you eat. And so you may not have heard this before, but cholesterol might actually be very, very good for a human being. And so this guy was getting 6,000 milligrams of cholesterol a day from eating 24 soft-boiled eggs. The thing of it is, when they measured his blood cholesterol levels, they were perfectly normal. And he showed no signs of heart disease or plaque in his arteries or clogged arteries, if you want to say it that way, at all. And he was 88. Now, to me, that's pretty remarkable. The article goes on to say, over the past 13 years, though, there's been a growing body of evidence that it might be something in the food that's causing the damage to our blood vessels. So if this 88-year-old man can eat 24 eggs a day that are loaded with cholesterol, and he didn't have a problem, you're thinking, well, what else could it be? Well, here you go. The suspected ingredient is a modified form of cholesterol called oxidized cholesterol, okay? This is not the kind that you find in eggs or other fresh foods. Oxidized cholesterol forms when cholesterol reacts with oxygen, so it oxidizes. Maybe another way of saying this is when you put, if you were to scratch the protective coating of the clear coat and the paint off your car and it was the bare sheet metal, well, how long would it take for that to get wet with the rain, and then oxygen from the atmosphere causes that to rust? That's what oxidation is. It's rust forming. And so this usually occurs when high cholesterol foods are dried, such as powdered eggs. Well, here's what you don't know. How do you think that they dry liquid eggs? Well, they do it real easy. They run it through a metal gun. It looks almost like a spray gun, like if you're going to spray an oil-filled tank or a piece of heavy equipment and you wanted to put a lot of paint out there, you'd have a spray gun. But what they do is they liquefy eggs. They're already liquid when they're fresh. And so they run them through a metal gun that's heated to 700 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, you know as well as I do, no one can survive 700 degrees. It makes me think about the fiery furnace that they tried to throw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego on. How can a human being survive 700 degrees? Well, it would be God's good hand of favor. That would be it. And so any time that you heat up either milk to make whey protein, or you take eggs in order to make them much lighter to ship them overseas or to troops in Afghanistan or something like that, what you would do is you would turn them into powder. You're trying to get the moisture out of them to make them lighter. The problem is that cholesterol under the temperature of 700 degrees Fahrenheit, it will oxidize. Let me tell you what oxidized cholesterol does. So if you think that you're helping yourself by taking a protein powder that's been made this way, you're not. The oxidized cholesterol in a whey protein powder that's been where they've used high heat to make it, it's going to go straight to your arteries. I don't know the whole story on this. I mean, I've studied a lot. But let's just put it this way. Oxidized cholesterol, when it's been really heated up, it just has this ability to go straight to the inner lining of your arteries and form a sticky plaque there. Does that make sense? So, one of the reasons to avoid powdered eggs and powdered milk, don't do it under any circumstances. I've already had like about 10 people try to call and get in. And we can try it again if you want. But there's I'm trying to look at this right here. Let me make sure. I think I have all the buttons pushed right. Okay. Well, I mean, as far as I know, I've got them all pushed exactly right. It's just not working. Must be something with the lighting. Sorry about that. Since eggs have the highest amount of cholesterol per unit weight of all common foods, of course, there's one that has more. Calf liver or beef liver has more cholesterol. You know, people began to be very, very afraid of them, saying, oh, no, we can't do that. That's full of cholesterol. I don't want my cholesterol to become elevated. But is that actually true? Well, it says, once called nature's most perfect food by nutritionists, eggs fell into disfavor and their consumption began to plummet after 1950. The average number of eggs consumed in the United States per person per year dropped from a high of 389 in 1950 to only 234 in 1989. So that's what, 39 years removed from 1950. Oh, boy. It said Americans are eating many fewer eggs today than at the turn of the century. Thousands of egg farmers have gone out of business over the last 30 years because of the false dietary cholesterol scare. I don't know that's correct, but it's very interesting to me. And many millions of Americans have given up or substantially reduced their consumption of one of the best and most economical foods for no good reason. I'm trying to think of where this other article was. I'm sure I can come across it. I probably shouldn't read this to you, but I will. It comes from the... Now, get this. Just take it all with a grain of salt. I mean nothing bad by it. But this comes from the Saturday Evening Post in the year is 1945. So here we are, right there at the end of World War II. We're getting close to it, correct? Okay. The title of the article from the Saturday Evening Post 1945 is, Are We Starving to Death? So that's our starting point. And here it goes. We tried a starvation experiment with male rabbits, which are naturally great breeders. When we fed certain pens of rabbits a mineral-deficient hay in their diet, we reduced the males in a few weeks to the point where they wouldn't look at a woman rabbit. Okay? Other rabbits, kept on a similar but mineral-rich diet with hay from treated soil, were regular wolves. That's their terminology, not mine. By reversing the diets, the wolves became woman-shy, and the tame cats became wolves. Okay? Lambs that were fed mineral-rich hay from treated soil made nearly three times as much gain in weight. You know, you might want to pay attention to this right here. When you eat something that's very mineral-rich, you gain weight. Now, when I say gaining weight, I don't mean excessive weight that's not useful or good. Nobody's going to say, please, let me add 55 pounds of body fat to my body. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about strengthening and fortifying your bones and your joints. I mean, who doesn't benefit from having heartier, thicker, more nutrient-dense bones? This is where, when you're in your 80s and you slip and fall in the driveway and your hands and your hips hit the concrete, but you bounce back up, you're going, oh my goodness, I can't believe I didn't have a broken bone from that. And I do hear these stories all the time. It's amazing how sometimes somebody can fall and hit the concrete hard and they can just pop right back up, and I'm going, well, you missed the bullet on that one. And nobody wants a fractured bone. But when they fed these animals mineral-rich foods, what would happen was they gained weight. That is a serious, serious problem with a lot of people that have become very, very sick. They have depleted themselves of all their reserves, and they've got nothing in reserve. So, of course, their body can't gain weight. But if you get to the point where you start gaining weight after a sickness, that is a good, good sign. Let me read this again. Lambs that were fed mineral-rich hay from treated soil, they probably mean compost and stuff like that, or maybe chicken-backed compost, you know, from chicken poop. Anyway, they made nearly three times as much gain in weight in a given time as lambs from the same flock and the same amount of hay, but they got it from mineral poor soil. What does that tell you right there? Then it goes on to say that, excuse me, elephants in Burma, when they were fed on sugarcane, which is a mineral poor diet, that was their food, sugarcane, they quickly become unable to do the heavy moving of the timber, which is required of them. A properly mineral-rich diet predisposes a man to health and normal functioning, and the healthier we are, the better we're able to resist disease that ought to lay us low. That comes from the Saturday Evening Post. You got it? It is, I think you're going to agree with me. You know how hard it is to restore your health when you've had a major, major issue. I don't think a week goes by that I don't hear a story of someone. It's probably more like about five stories, where they became sick with a viral infection and they're still not right. Well, pay attention. You gotta have foods that have minerals. That's one of the reasons why I'm such a fan of things like cod liver oil that's high in nutrients. Okay, is it magically working now? No, I can't hear anything. I'm so sorry, I tried once again. As far as I know, I have all the buttons pushed just right, but it's just not working. So, sorry about that. When I say not working, I mean taking calls from y'all. Okay, I like the way this doctor writes it. This is from Bruce Pacetti. He's a doctor of dental surgery. I like his comment here. Listen to this. Our ancestors knew nothing about vitamins, and they did fine. What a great way to start a commentary. They didn't know about food additives. They didn't know what artificial coloring was. They didn't know anything about artificial flavoring. And above all, about pasteurized or homogenized or skim milk. They didn't know anything about that. If they knew what milk was, it would have been what they collected from their Guernsey cow in the milk pail. Medical researchers from other countries, they have attributed the high degree of heart disease and cancer in the United States to our high consumption of milk. pasteurized, of course, and in recent years, homogenized or skim milk. This, along with our national addiction to Coca-Cola, ice cream, donuts, pizza, and candy bars, it gives us one of the highest rates of degeneration or degenerative diseases in the world. For all these and other such popular favorites, such as powdered fruit drinks, sugar-coated cereals, hot dogs, potato chips, are susceptibility foods, foods that is, which nibble away at rather than build up. They nibble away at your immune system. Why do you think they call them empty calories? They're called empty calories because they do not provide anything of any value. As a matter of fact, the opposite's true. They tend to strip away the strength of the human body and the immune system. You know, the last lady that I saw yesterday, she told me very clearly. She said, I got myself into a bind. My immune system is just completely wiped out, deficient. It's been bled dry. And she said, I got to rebuild myself now. I'm going, you're right. And so but this is what she told me that I really appreciate. She said, I really think this was a good thing when I got sick for this last month. I said, really? She said, yeah. She said, it made me rethink the way that I'm taking care of myself and what I'm involved in. And she goes, I just can't do it. And you know what? I've made some observations, and this woman is really, really strong. I told her, I said, you know what? There's probably not many people that could go through what you've been through and come out smell like a rose. But you're right. Your body is depleted. It's exhausted. Now the question is, what's the most positive thing that we can do to help get her back to, you know, a good place? Does that make sense? And so you've got to come to the end of yourself where you decide, am I going to continue down this road? I'm so tired and exhausted. Can I have a show of hands right now? How many people want to go to sleep at night and wake up feeling miserable, like you haven't slept? You want to do that? I don't have the article right in front of me, but I was looking at the reference. And this study came from a country called Iran. You ever heard of Iran? And in the study, they took diabetics, and you know what I mean by that. People that have elevated blood sugar, and that's a problem. You're not magically better off by having elevated levels of blood sugar. That is not going to make you better. You know that, though. But the main issue they were trying to tackle, and this is why I was attracted to reading it, is they wanted to use just a little bit of saffron. They did not use a saffron extract that had been standardized to provide a stronger potency of the components of the saffron that had a stronger health benefit. No, they just used 100 milligrams of saffron powder. That was it. 100 milligrams is not very much. It's probably the equivalent of a small capsule that might contain an herb or a vitamin, but a 100 milligram capsule, that is not big. So they didn't use a saffron extract, which probably would have been a bit more potent. They just used 100 milligrams of the spice called saffron. Guess what the study showed? It showed there was a very significant improvement in the quality of a person's sleep. How can you not listen to this stuff? Has anybody been rushed to the emergency room from taking saffron? No, I haven't heard of it. I know a little bit about prescription drugs. I'm just going to say a little bit. But then again, guess who taught me? Well, I had a pharmacist. He was my teacher in college when he taught toxicology and pharmacology courses. Now, I hate to admit this, but I have forgotten the gentleman's name. But he was a good teacher. But he used to always promote the idea of the minimum effective dose of a pharmaceutical, meaning you don't give too much because there's going to be a health problem that's going to come down the road. But do you realize how many people have just literally taken their lives because they can't go on because of poor sleep? Well, in the study from Iran, all they gave them for 4 months, and it was a four-month study, they gave them saffron. And so what can you learn from this? Well, maybe a little bit of saffron on your food is going to be a good deal. Okay? Now, listen to this right here. This comes from an author by the name of R. Dean Conrad, The Great American Tragedy. But he goes on to write or quote, Sir Robert McCarrison, M.D., from England, found his clinical animals became desexed when fed on a highly refined and processed food. Dr. Clive McCrae of Cornell University got similar results with his clinical animals. All the animals fed on natural foods retained vitality. Okay? Sterility is on the increase among our people here in America. Is the eating of our highly refined and processed foods affecting our people as it does these animals that live in a research facility? Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Okay. I'm trying to think of something good to... Okay, here we go. Let me read this to you right here. This comes from William Duffy. I like him. He says, you're having a picnic at the beach or at the park. The typical American family arrives. The kids explode out of the station wagon. You know this was old if they say station wagon, don't you? We're talking about 1970s probably. The kids explode out of the station wagon before Dad has turned off the ignition. Mother starts unloading the car and informing Papa where to put the blanket. Before the soft drink cooler is sprung open, Mother attacks the air, sand, and the greenery with a lethal insecticide spray. Massive retaliation against the insect world that had beleaguered them on the last country jaunt. Mother has forgotten, if she ever knew, that just as spilled sugar in our kitchen attracts ants and insects, so does sugar in our bloodstream attract mosquitoes, microbes, and parasites. That is about as true a statement as you're going to cover today. One of the great joys of being sugar-free is to be able to... When I say sugar-free, I'm reading the article. This article was obviously written before we had aspartame, acesulfame, Splenda, sucralose, NutraSweet, all that jazz. Okay. One of the great joys of being sugar-free, that means being without sugar, okay, is to be able to lie on the beach or loll in the mountains without being bothered by mosquitoes or other creatures. Once off sugar for a year or so, try it and see if it isn't true for you. If you take along a guest who's still addicted to sugar, lie side by side and see who the mosquitoes go for and who's left alone. After all, it's no accident that the first cases of mosquito-borne yellow fever in the Western Hemisphere, they occurred in the sugar island of Barbados in 1647. In the beginning, it was called Nova Pestis. Yellow fever spread from one sugar center to another. Guadalupe, St. Kitts, Jamaica, Brazil, British Guinea, Spain, Portugal, New Orleans, and finally Cuba, where the U.S. Army mounted a massive campaign at the turn of the 20th century to make our sugar colony out of Cuba safe from mosquitoes. You know as well as I do, if you reduce the amount of sugar, you're going to feel better. You just are. You really don't have to be that smart. You just have to ask a person, tell me what has happened to you once you started eating a lot less sugar. They tell you, oh my goodness, I feel amazing. And then you ask them, well, is it worth it to you in order to be able to function at a high level and feel good? And they say, you know what? Maybe it is worth it. I'm going, do you really want to go back to where you have horrible arthritis? I still remember that commercial that was on the radio where the oncology or the cancer treatment centers, I'll just say somewhere here in East Texas, maybe it's a town that begins with the letter T, but they were literally bragging on the radio that they had achieved such high levels of excellence at the administration of chemotherapy to a patient's body that it was perfectly fine for them to have a Coke and a, you know, whatever meal they would get from a fast food restaurant, eat it while they're getting the chemo. Are you kidding me? Do we not even have a basic understanding that cancer cells are sugar junkies? Oh my goodness. Well, okay. Evidently we don't. I ask almost everyone that comes to see me, what did your doctor tell you about this? And it's almost the same story every single time. I kind of get sick of it, but I don't tell them I'm sick of it. But, you know, what good does it do? But you know what the number one comment that I hear is? What is your... Okay, let's kind of do some role playing here. I'll pretend I'm me, and I'll pretend I'm the patient, too. How's that going to go? So what did your doctor tell you about your lab work? They said everything looks just fine. Well, show me a copy of it. Well, what are all these highs and lows? Well, the doctor said that's fine. Well, do you feel the same way? And the answer is always no. And I tell them, every doctor that I've ever talked to, I'm talking to the patient now, they always become extremely concerned when it's their lab test. And I tell them, I said, you know what the doctor never tells me? And they say, what, Dr. Morgan? I say, they never say let's watch and wait. No. It's almost like there's a double standard there. I mean, do you get what I'm saying here? If you go to the doctor with a health problem and they do labs, and there's really no discussion of what the labs mean, and they don't really give you a plan on how to restore your health, they just say as they walk out the door, let's just watch and wait and see what happens. Well, I don't know that that's really a plan that you really want to follow. Have you ever heard the term before that action beats anxiety? You ever heard that one? Well, it's true. Maybe you should try that. If you're feeling extremely anxious, maybe you can sort of lose yourself in cleaning the bathroom or running an errand like getting groceries so the family has something to eat or making a grocery list to try to choose some pretty good foods. If you're anxious, why don't you do something? Action. I think the half-brother of Jesus talks about that in the book of James. And James was the half-brother of Jesus, so when he talks, people listen, right? He's not E.F. Hutton. He's only better than E.F. Hutton, right? So James says this. He says, you tell me about your faith, but I show you my faith through my works. There's a bottom line right there. If you believe in something strong enough, you'll do it. Have you ever heard the phrase before that work beats worry? I think that's true too. What are you going to accomplish by worrying about something when you've got work in front of you that needs to be done? It's really a gift from God to have work, isn't it? How many men would completely never get into any trouble at all as long as they had work that really was significant? They found it a challenge. They were tired at the end of the day. Well, God knows what He's doing. Whatsoever your hands find to do, do it with all your might as serving God, not man. That's a pretty good one, isn't it? So it's a gift that you have work. Now, the other thing that's a gift, which it's kind of hard to talk about this for some people, and I understand that. You're not going to get any judgment from me. But it can be a gift from God to have a health issue or a condition or a problem. What if it forces you to recalibrate your life or reset or change your goals or decide that you need a different course of action? If you say, you know what, me, okay, I'm not saying this because anybody told me recently, so I don't want anybody thinking I'm mentioning them. But if I push into a human being's liver and they scream out in pain, I'm kind of waiting for them to tell me the reason why. And they say, oh, by the way, I've been so stressed, I've been drinking a lot of alcohol here lately. It doesn't do any good to judge a person, but what are we going to do to get the liver to heal? Because you know that's not going to go well. You can't abuse and mistreat the body and expect it to serve you forever. It's going to eventually break down. I know that you know this, but when your body starts breaking down faster than the ability of your immune system and other systems to keep the cells and the tissues and the glands healthy, that's where you're going to have symptoms. Yeah, that's it right there. So when you feel really, really good and you have energy, and your sleep is restorative, and you're refreshed when you wake up, and you're really a happy, happy person, Those are all very, very good signs. But what do you do if you're just exhausted all the time? If you can't really get out of pain? If you have such tremendous stiffness of your joints and one infection after the other? I mean, sure, there is a time and a place to take an antibiotic to cure double pneumonia, or a yeast remedy, or, an anti-yeast or fungal drug, because there's an overgrowth. There's a time and place for all that. If somebody has a horrific urinary tract infection, well, maybe they actually need an antibiotic, okay? But if you rely strictly on antibiotics for every time that you have a runny nose, every time that you have watery eyes or red eyes, or your ears feel stuffy, or you have a little bit of a cough, or maybe your stomach doesn't feel right, or you got diarrhea, well, the studies show now that the more antibiotics that a person takes over a lifetime, they tend to have much higher risk of developing cancer. And maybe another way of saying this is, God designed it where you're supposed to have literally thousands of unique species. When I say thousands, maybe I'm thinking 1,150 unique species of beneficial microbes. And these beneficial bacteria, well, guess what they do? They take up space in the body. And if you got good bacteria taking up space along the lining of your cecum, your colon, your large bowel, that's really what you want. Because if you've got a bunch of good bacteria lining your colon, guess what? There's no room for the toxic yeast and germs and toxic ones to live. I told a person the other day, we were having a conversation about a type of infection called C. diff. It stands for Clostridium difficile. I said that wrong. But for short, they call it a C. diff infection. Oh my goodness. Guess where you get this? You go to the hospital and you pick it up. That's where it's from. I'm not knocking the hospital, but when you go to the hospital, you're going to be exposed to people that have more toxic, virulent germs than anywhere else on the planet. No one's ever told me that they went on a picnic in the woods down by the creek, and they spent the day there, you know, fishing for small catfish, and they had a horrible infection that came from it. No, that doesn't happen. But if you went to the hospital or the emergency room and you decide, I just want to hang out in the ER all day long, well, you're going to be around a lot of people that are sick. And every time that they breathe, for all I know, there may be some toxic virus or germs come out of them. Yeah, that's it. Do you really need to do that? Well, no. And so the more beneficial bacteria that you have in your gut, the better off your health is going to be. It's really just that simple. And so the more beneficial microbes you have, that's going to be because you've trained them to be strong and healthy. How can you do that? Well, you can't really do that by eating a lot of sugar. One thing that sugar does a good job of, it feeds toxic yeast and fungus. You ever heard of a type of yeast called Candida? You're not better off by allowing it to grow unchecked. But you've got to have an immune system in order to repair your body and to keep your body safe and healthy from infection. What do you do with one person doesn't get sick and everybody else in the house gets sick? Well, maybe the person that didn't get sick, maybe they have an immune system that's just a little bit more robust and it's better able to do its job. Well, that's what you're aiming for. And if that happens, it's usually going to be by choice and on purpose. Yes, I know, I've heard it from a lot of people. They say, Roy, there's no such thing as a free will. You're not capable of making one choice one way or the other. Well, politely and respectfully, I disagree with that. You get to choose everything you put in your mouth. So if you want to put a Brussels sprout in your mouth, then that's your call. If you want to eat, fill in the blank, anything that would be fast food, that's your choice also. The only way that you're going to rebuild your body is by doing the right thing. And part of that is putting good food into your mouth, something that promotes growth and healing, And so, for example, I don't have the article right in front of me, but what they did was they looked at older people that lived longer than anywhere else. And so you started thinking about maybe the Japanese from the island of Okinawa, or maybe the Hunzas from is that from Kashmir or Pakistan? I can't remember. Or somewhere in that Himalayan mountain range. But what are they doing? They're eating and consuming animal-based protein that's from a good, clean, wholesome source. They're not consuming skim milk or powdered milk. I can guarantee you that. You probably, if you told them about that concept of powdered milk, they'd say, "What are you talking about? We don't have a word for that in our language." But anyway, so what did I want to read? Okay. I had this article about sodium that I found so interesting, and I can kind of give you the gist of it just without looking it up. I always try to come to the radio station with a few ideas that I might want to cover, but today I kind of planned on taking phone calls. You see how that worked out, don't you? But it's okay. And part of the... You just got to be adaptable in this world, right? Absolutely. One door closes, another door opens. But I was going to talk about sodium just for a second. And in the article, it was saying most people are afraid of salt or they're afraid of sodium. And you know what? Maybe you should be. When you consume foods that have high amounts of what's called monosodium glutamate or lots of refined sodium, well, that might be a problem to you. Number one, it's heavily refined. All the essential nutrients and minerals have been stripped away. Because real salt that's unadulterated, it has color to it. I mean, haven't you ever heard of the Himalayan pink salt? Have you ever seen Celtic salt before? To me, Celtic salt looks almost like the sand at Galveston, kind of a gray, dirty color. I went to Galveston one time where the water was perfectly clear, but that was one time. Every other time, it was kind of brown and dirty looking. But I wonder what it's like going to Galveston on a rainy day. It's probably fabulous, isn't it? But in the article on salt, I don't know if you know this or not, but your stomach produces a substance called hydrochloric acid. Well, if you look at what salt's composition is, it's sodium chloride, if you want to break it down. But if you're using something like Redmond sea salt, or Celtic salt, or the pink Himalayan salt, or other raw salts, you're providing your body sodium and chloride. But that's what your body has to have in order to digest food. And one thing that's been proven is the more carbohydrates that a human takes in, or the more sugars, the more sodium and salt their body requires to process the sugar. So let's just say that refined sugar is an empty calorie, meaning it doesn't have sodium in it. It doesn't have the minerals or the vitamins that we need to process the sugar. So if a human being starts becoming depleted of sodium, here's what's going to happen. You're going to drink water, and it's going to go right through you. So if you're a woman or you're a man and you drink a glass of water and then 20 minutes later you're running to the bathroom and you feel like the entire amount of water you just consumed is just running right through you in the form of urine, that might be a very unique indication that you're low in sodium. Now, you have a gland called the adrenal glands. And man, do they perform a function that's just essential to life? Absolutely. If a person stands up really quickly and they get lightheaded or dizzy and feel like they have to put their hand on a back of a chair or a wall to keep from falling over, well, that'd be a pretty good sign that the adrenal glands are underperforming and they're not doing their job right. Does that make sense? But you've got to have sodium in order to produce what are called digestive enzymes or hydrochloric acid or digestive juices. And so I've seen some people that if you just give them a little bit of salt, if they add it to their food, and I realize there's some people that are just terrified of salt. Well, you got to have a little bit if you're going to have physical strength and stamina. If a human being says, "I have no energy whatsoever, and I'm just utterly exhausted, I'm running on fumes," what would you think if a hair mineral analysis was performed on them? And it's a real simple, straightforward test. But just like if you had, let's just say that you're a rancher and you're raising cows, and for whatever reason you go to the county ag agent and say, what is the deal with my crops? I can't get my cows to grow. They're always sickly. I'm having to worm them from parasites and other parasites all the time. I just can't get them to do right. Well, he says, let's do a soil sample test. Well, what if the soil sample test came back and said, oh my goodness, you are so deficient in these nutrients. You're like super, super low in calcium. Well, you might have a feed and seed fertilizing operation come out there and spread, you know, chicken manure all over the place and spread lime to try to make the soil very, very happy. Because when the soil's happy and nutrient sufficient, well, guess what? You make high quality grass and hay for the cows to eat. And so your body's the same way. You've got to have sodium, and without sodium, you can literally have one digestive issue after the other. One of my most favorite remedies that, you know, anybody can make, I know that you can go to the store and you could buy Gatorade, Powerade, what's the other one? Body Armor. There's like a bunch of them. But to me, one of the things that you've got to consider is, what am I going to do to make sure that I have enough water percentages or levels inside of my cells? And so let's just agree that maybe the ideal hydration level of the human body is you're supposed to be 70 to 72% pure water. Just like the earth is covered by 70 to 72% water. That's what your body's made of. You know, the salt concentration of the ocean, that's called the salinity, it's exactly the same as the amount of salt that's supposed to be in your blood. That can't be by happenstance or mistake. That's God's great design. And so without sodium, you start to lose your strength. And so there's a simple test called a hair mineral analysis. If you had one done, what would you say if your sodium levels came back super low? Well, I would turn to you, if I was reading it, I'd say, hey, you're running on fumes, aren't you? You know what? There's nothing that's quite so discouraging as losing your strength. Do you remember how you used to be just completely full of energy and endurance? That's beautiful. Think of all the things that you can do if you just feel good. Now, you know that you're driving a high-maintenance vehicle, and so am I. Well, everybody listening is driving a high-maintenance vehicle. I don't think we can compare ourselves to a car where you need to check the oil and the brake fluid and the antifreeze and stuff like that. Although if you do routinely drive your car around without checking that, you can't be shocked or surprised if something's low, something breaks. You got to have antifreeze in your radiator, right? Of course you do. So if you're low in salt, you're going to be so low in energy. Now, one thing that I've observed, if a woman is low in salt, she's the one that's most prone to being anxious and depressed. And she feels as if things are not going to go well. Why doesn't anything work out for me? But when you tend to have adequate sodium and salt, you tend to have just quite a bit more motivation and ambition and drive. And is that essential today? Oh my goodness, yes. I think one of the comments that I get to hear all the time is that people don't want to work. I don't really know technically that's true, but you know what? You don't have to be like a job analyst working for the government to figure out there are some help wanted signs up at all the businesses, and they can't find workers. Well, I wonder if some of it's because the nutrition is so horrible in America that people have just lost their desire to have what's called ambition and drive and motivation. I mean, is it just me or is work fun? Yes, it's fun. It's supposed to be. Now, obviously, if you have a job that you don't care for, it doesn't teach you anything, and it's not anything that's going to help you to grow in grace and knowledge, then maybe you have an idea there's a job that would do that. I really don't know when the program ends, but I think we're probably pretty close. But Lord willing, everything will work perfectly fine next week. And everybody have a Merry Christmas, and may the Lord bless you and keep you.